This is a show about facing fear, unlocking courage, and taking action.
Courage isn't necessarily a daunting thing.
It's going to give you more purpose. It's going to give you more drive.
It feels like making a courageous decision is going to get you closer to who you aspire to be.
It's knowledge plus faith plus action equals courage.
I don't think we're perfect, and I don't think we pretend to be, but I think what I have learned is that the reason why Patagonia has been successful for 51, almost 52 years is because it's filled with people that truly care and walk that talk. I make up my own jingles, and I think you need one, probably, right? Courage.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. Well, what's funny, I mean, look, hey, welcome to the podcast, everyone. If you're here already, we have our little music and it's like, boom. It's like, it hits hard. You can hear the bass on it. We have like, but I liked, like, I think
a little voiceover. Yeah.
A little trail at the end was like, I like it. Courage or something there.
Yeah.
Why does music do that to us?
Energize?
Yeah, it just is like a little smile. Can't not smile.
I think it's truly like a beat which mimics nature, which mimics our hearts, which I think just connects. I lived in LA now for 2 years. I'm worried that I'm starting to become woo-woo LA. But that's I do think that's my answer, yeah.
So when we met, you weren't living in LA. You were living, you know, Chicago. you're halfway between where you're from.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where you live now.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's start at the end, actually. So I wouldn't normally start here, but I think, you know, I hope, look, hey listener, I hope you stay for the whole convo, but you're busy. You know, maybe this is you get 15 minutes. I get it. Yeah. We get it, right? You're busy. So I want to start at the end. I'm really proud of you.
Thank you.
That's not big leaguing or like, I know you from a last life. I know how hard you've worked. I mean, you would leave a continent to come here to live your truth, right? So I'm not even talking professionally yet.
Right.
Just to live your truth.
Yeah.
And then professionally, I feel like you are in the 1%. Like the amount of times that I will talk about Patagonia, and I don't know what your reality is, so that's almost like, oh, if you only knew, right? But when I talk about companies that aren't just talking the talk, but they're walking it, and it's like, well, of course, this is how we do things. You're at it. You're the head of internal comms and engagement at Patagonia. Happy anniversary!
Thank you. You've now
been there 2 years. Super proud, man. What have you learned? What have you learned?
Yeah, I mean, I was somewhat critical before I joined them. Like you, I was like, from the outside, it looks like a company who's trying to make a difference, do something. I mean, they call themselves an experiment, and in many ways it is. Like, can a company do business unusual? Can it be a force for good? You know, can it take from the planet and at the same time put the planet first? And I wasn't sure. And I don't think we're perfect, and I don't think we pretend to be, but I think what I have learned is that the reason why Patagonia has been successful for 51, almost 52 years is because it's filled with people that truly care and walk that talk every day. And actually, it's quite Patagonia to be that self-critical, like how I came in and constantly ask, are we getting it right? Are we getting it wrong? Should we improve? Should we change again? So I joined them thinking that I would use my usual playbook, and that this hasn't worked out. But I've also joined them and learned that it is a company that is always evolving. So what I've learned is still welcome, and what my experience is can still help, and I can be part of like what's next. So I think the company is where it is because I think it genuinely stands by its purpose and mission.
You know, it's I call the podcast an experiment. I wish every company actually saw themselves as an experiment, because I think it gives you permission. I mean, I'm wearing my mistake until you make a t-shirt today, right?
Yeah.
It gives, you know, it gives you permission to stay curious and to tinker and to play. And, you know, when you're making decisions for the right reasons, sometimes the execution goes wrong. But if at least you're doing it with the intent, then you can like iterate off of what you learn.
Yeah.
One of the things that brings me the most joy about the pod, we've now done like over 230 episodes, which is bonkers. Well,
congrats to you.
Well, it's not even that. It's like the more great, the more I'm constantly learning from you. Like I'm like the big takeaway is people who come on the show, they don't see themselves as, most of them don't see themselves as courageous.
Sure.
They see themselves as like keeping it real. Like I'm just trying to keep it real and go about my day. And I have to imagine at Patagonia, it's got to be refreshing that there's, that everyone, again, this is a generalization. A lot of people are really who they say they are, and they're trying to keep it real and be themselves. And it's almost like, look, I'm on a bigger mission here that I'm trying to accomplish. Is that true? Like if you took us on a little lap behind the curtain, you know, are you, I mean, I'm hoping you're going to say, I'm pleased to report that, yes, it's like people are really trying to like make the world a better place there.
Yeah, I think so, Ryan. It's the best and the hardest job I've ever had. It's the best because, to your point, it's at least room for imagination, and there's a lot of opportunity to be radically honest with ourselves and with our people. That feels really refreshing. It's also incredibly hard because Patagonia doesn't only require you to like reach the best quality. We do that too with our products. We believe in the best quality. We'll upcycle it, we'll repair it. And in many ways, that philosophy lives internally as well. So we'll aim for the best quality, but we'll also constantly ask ourselves and our team members, can we do this differently? So that open space that you mentioned in connection to courage feels very encouraging, but it's also sometimes hard to live there because, the world is your oyster in many ways. And when we think of simple things like how do we connect with our team members, most internal comms people might say, let's send out a newsletter, and Patagonia will do, let's send the best newsletter you've ever seen. And let's go beyond that and think about something radically different that only we as Patagonia can do. So that has felt encouraging and at moments, you know, slightly overwhelming.
You know, I get to gallivant around the country and sort of nudge folks to think a little bigger, go a little, you know, go for it, right? The amount of times I've said, this is my cap tip to you, and I'm actually wearing a cap, so I can really give you a cap tip. The amount of times I've said, if I showed up at Patagonia driving like a Hummer, assuming it's not an EV, right? Like, I've already lost the job interview. But the point of it is, I want companies to be better at vetting who they bring in. Is it on brand? I don't sense that's an issue at Patagonia. Like they're constantly, it's so clear. There's no guesswork on, are you trying to make the world a better place? Are you trying to save our human planet or not? When you went through the interview process, walk us through what that was like for you.
I'll give an answer to kind of your observation, and then I'll walk through like what my interview process was like. I think you're right. I do think we tend to hire people that are super connected to our purpose. But how they get there might look a little different. Like, we don't all have to be activists. We don't all have to be ambassadors of all our core sports. Like, we all bring something that ultimately get us there. Like, the experiment of Patagonia is like this, their environmental piece. There's a lot of storytelling piece. We're also unapologetically a for-profit business, which means that we have to make money in order to succeed in our purpose. So I will say there's like, within that purpose, there's a lot of room for team members to kind of tell us, you know, how they can contribute. And it's not necessarily like that stereotype core employee that you might envision. We have a lot of people that do enjoy our core sports and are very focused on environmental, but there's also people like myself, for example, that have more of a business background, really kind of understands like how a company makes money and spend my entire career helping team members to work more effectively towards meeting the goals of a company. Because guess what? When they do that, a company is just a little bit more profitable and a little bit more efficient. So Patagonia, I think we go beyond that because we're like, if profit, although part of our purpose isn't our only goal, what does internal comms mean? Which goes back to your point, like connecting people to each other, our purpose, and the opportunities to contribute to the urgent climate crisis. To test how people connect to any aspects of Patagonia, you'll go through an entire, a very long interview process. I think I interviewed with more than 30 people for over 4 months. I think it's like, it feels like joining a family, although, you know, we have to act like a team, a high functioning team, a family of people that want to make sure that, you know, we can work together. I think one thing that really stood out to me, because I was living in Chicago, I wasn't sure how California would feel. And my partner, who was born and raised in Chicago, wasn't sure either. And so they flew us both out to spend a day on campus so we as a family could decide how it would feel. And so I think after 3 months, 30 people, I was 1,000% sure about Patagonia, and I felt like they were 1,000% sure about me as well. And you'll see low turnover and people with an incredibly long career at Patagonia, because I think ensuring that people see themselves in that puzzle piece, I think is really incredibly important.
I mean, it is like dating.
Yeah.
You know, it is like dating. And I think a lot of us, like I have, I think when you're in the service business, you're trying to make it as clear as possible, but as swift as possible, to be like, are we aligned? Are we not aligned? Is this the one? You know, and yeah. I think if you're on the other side of the table, you've got to feel like, oh, like, no, like another, this isn't the one. This is Mr. or Mrs. Right, not Mr. or Mr. or Mrs. Right now, not Mr. or Mrs. Right.
Yeah. But
like you kind of landed at a place. Do you feel relief?
Yeah. Yeah, I feel relief, but I also feel super stimulated. I don't feel relief in the sense of like, oh God, I made it and now we're just going to...
Let me just chill.
You know, yeah, I felt, of course, like many people that join a company felt an immediate kind of pressure to prove myself. I also know that it's never right. Like building a network, learning about the business has an incredible history. We have our archives that is filled with old newsletters, old communications, like legacy products. I spent days with the team just learning about the philosophy, which kind of comes through everything we do before even writing or giving my opinion. I think I initially had this idea of like, I really need to rewire my entire brain in order to succeed here. And Vincent Stanley, who leads our philosophy, reminded me that they didn't hire me because they wanted me to forget everything that I've learned. They hired me because I could bring something that could be part of like the next chapter. So it's not static. It can still change. And so I feel definitely encouraged to continue to bring that. Can I say something personal too, Ryan?
Yeah, of course.
When you talked about dating, I'm actually getting married next year.
Congratulations. Yeah.
And talking about courage, I was thinking about that. Like when my partner asked me if I wanted to marry him, like that all came up. Like I was like, yes, but here's 5 really weird things that I will always do. And like, is that okay? Like, are we doing life together? Can you accept the fact that I still don't understand how to load the dishwasher? And so being vulnerable about like, I'm not perfect, but I would like to do this thing called life with you, I think feels like a personal, but like a really courageous thing.
I also think that's sort of the, first of all, the congrats, really awesome.
Thank you.
So great. Yeah. So great. You know, like the first thing I think of is, well, that's the point. Like there is no... I always joke about, this is just my personal take. Like when we talk about personal core values, I'll talk about Jerry Maguire and how that movie messed up my generation, right? Like there's some great lines. Show me the money, Jerry. It's a great line. You had me at hello. That was sweet. And then you complete me. And I think you complete me messed us up. I think it's me complete me. I think it's you compliment me. but it's not you complete me. This is just, I could be getting it wrong, but like from my lens, my wife knows, Randy knows who she is. I know who I am. And we actually, it's those little, probably that list of five that you have.
Yeah.
Those little ticks make the other person smile because it's what makes you unique. And although I should have tried that, I don't know how to load the dishwasher. That would have
that makes him smile, but yeah, I hear you.
That was brilliant. Way above my strategic pay grade, David, for sure. But yes, so the obvious question then is, are you cooking at the wedding?
Oh my God.
Because cooking is your love language.
I know.
This is your love language. Are you not?
If I could, I wouldn't. And so, yeah, like I started as a chef in working in Amsterdam restaurants because it is my language. Like cooking for all those guests, I think would take away from the experience of actually enjoying it. But next week, we're doing this thing called our global brand workshop, which we're bringing in like product developers from across the world. And we spent a few days talking about, you know, upcoming product lines and how we're going to sell in. And one thing that we're trying this time is like, can we ask employees to host people at their homes? So you don't do the bar restaurant afterwards, like you always do when you have those kind of conferences, conventions, but we give people a little bit more of an experience, especially when they travel to the US. And so, of course, I was the first one to like throw my head in the ring and be like, I need to cook. And so I'm up for cooking for like 15 people, which seems like an easier task.
Yeah, probably a better choice than your wedding. Like, enjoy your wedding.
Yeah.
And so I'm also curious, as the Rock has skipped across the pond and then even further west to LA, what have you picked up about the way you cook? Like, what have you picked up about, you know, maybe you said you were a chef back home and then you went to Chicago and you got to, you know, and if I remember correctly, you're like farmers marketing it up, right? Like you're like going and looking at produce and give people more color in like your curious process.
I think when I was young and started in the kind of culinary world, it was the time when El Bulli was the number one restaurant in the world. And so there was a lot of experimenting. There was a lot of like foams and bubbles and making products look different to what they are intended to look like and then surprise people. Alinea was huge in Chicago where I live, where, you know, food will literally float in with like a sugar air balloon. I think as a society, including the US, although I think the US has further to go, I think we've all agreed to some extent that we want food to taste like food. And we don't want people to mess with it too much. I think LA or California definitely is closer to that, like respecting kind of the origin, but I think still has ways to go in like presenting food authentically. I think my current vision on food is like, talent is like combining 2 to 3 flavors on a plate and doing it really well. But those flavors have to be good because you sourced the right product. A tomato with an olive oil and some perfect sea salt could be a starter if you do it well, which means that you have to go beyond just your normal grocery bliss and look for those products. And so, yes, there are a lot of like local vendors, including street vendors, that will sell products that taste like they're intended to. That said, you know, it's an ongoing journey to find that. And that's where I'm obsessed. Like I know what a good tomato should taste like. And so when I get something that is manipulated, I get a little upset. So I'm always on the hunt for product. And I think my message is to like pay for quality. And it might mean that you get less, but what you do get, you really refine with some beautiful, simple cooking techniques and let those flavors speak for itself. Or again, combine 2 to 3 flavors that like bring it all out in each other. But I think not do 20 ingredients with ingredients that you're not very proud of, including the way that they were sourced or how healthy they are for our planet is like an ongoing journey of mine. So yes, you'll find me Friday, Saturday, Sunday, big Patagonia backpack on and just looking for stuff and trying it and then going back and saying hi to the farmer and asking how they got it, building that relationship. And yeah, it's never ending. It's the curiosity of like that world is, I mean, it can last me forever, I think.
Well, also, it's got to, maybe you knew going in, I'm sure you did, but Patagonia is now playing in the food space. Like, mm-hmm. is this like a dream come true? Were you like, I must go play in this sandbox? Like, did you, I'm assuming you knew when you were interviewing, or did you not? Yeah. Did you not know? Okay.
I feel that itch. Paul Lightfoot, who leads that business for us, is doing an incredible job. And I, you know, I look at that team at awe in terms of how they continue to innovate in that in a food industry that's really broken. Our founder realized that, yes, we can make an impact by selling the best quality clothes or gear, but ultimately people have to eat three times a day. So if we were ever to make like an outsized impact on this world, it could be really interesting for us to kind of play in the food industry and again, show people that you can source in ways that do less harm to the world that we, you know, we all live on. So yeah, I'm definitely always the first to try. My cabin is stocked with our pastas, which I really like, some of our beers, some of our canned seafood. Really fun. Yeah, really fun.
Feels like a fun time to be there. You know, I obviously you try to, and the one question I will ask, you know, and you can answer it any time, is like, what is it like to be the head of internal comms and engagement? Like, what is it like? Like, what is the day? Is it constantly different? You know, is it, are you, when do you play offense? When are you putting out fires? Is there a crisis comms part of it? Are you getting to stay experimental?
Mm.
You know, if there was like a pie chart and you had to break it down in percentages, what does that chart look like?
I never asked myself that question, but it's good. I mean, what I always advocate for, and the team might put that on a t-shirt, like the t-shirt that you're wearing right now, is this idea of like being 70% proactive and 30% reactive, especially because if we're 70% organized, strategic, really working towards our priorities, the company's priorities, then we owe it to ourselves to be in the driver's seat. I think we also then set ourselves up to be kind of a strategic function in driving business through engaging our people. But some days it feels like the other way around. And I'm think it's also okay to accept those days and those weeks where we're just like putting out fires, jumping in everywhere. I think that if I were to have a task as like the head of internal comms and engagement, is to just constantly bring people back. There are so many opportunities within Patagonia to activate people, to tell stories, but there's a real risk of like overloading people, overloading ourselves, not remaining focused. Shiny is always great, but like, hey, let's come back to what we said we would do at the beginning of the year and let's see if we're still making progress there. Because remember, we all felt really good about that. And I see the issue and I see the opportunity. And maybe that's, you know, a second phase of the strategy that we're going into. But reminding people that there's a plan in place and making sure that we continue to make progress feels, I think, engaging and rewarding to them, but also allows me to showcase like the role that internal comms can play in an organization like Patagonia. And that said, Brian, if there's one thing I worry about, it's the team. I always worry about not being clear enough, not being engaging enough, not being excited enough, not being encouraging enough. Like it's, everyone needs something different. And I know you can't be everything for everyone, but I think I worry a lot less about myself and a lot more about how they see themselves in the team, if they feel good about the work that they're doing, if they are understanding how it all ladders up to a bigger picture, and if they all believe in that bigger picture, because I think that's so critical.
Is the bigger picture, does it remain to be save our human planet? Is that the bigger picture?
Yeah, I think our bigger picture as a team is to connect people to each other and our purpose. Like if we can build a community of team members that are clear on how their jobs and their daily lives at Patagonia ladder up to purpose, but also ladder up to each other, and we are all walking towards that together, I think that's key for my team and kind of the role that we play at Patagonia. So yeah, that is making sure that they receive information and inspiration, no matter where you are, if you're logging in remote or in a store or in a distribution center, we want to reach you with information that you care about and that reflects your daily life and that feels relevant to who you are as an individual. And then we want you to feel inspired. There's so many stories, either regarding the impact that we're making in the world or the products that we're developing that are worth celebrating or recognizing. And then there's an opportunity, once you know all of that, to help people to step into action. And at Patagonia, that means being an activist. So we all have 16 hours of activism hours that we should use throughout the year for things that we strongly believe in. There's activism internships that people can do. There's constant, we call them brain foods, like vendors or local communities that come in to talk to us about some of the issues that they're facing and asking us for help. So there's a lot of opportunity to not only do that first bit, which is like to make sure that everyone's like clear, but then like what happens when you're clear? It's like you want to do something. So let us be a place that helps you to understand what that doing something is and do it in a way that feels very Patagonia.
So let's talk about your activism.
Like, yeah.
Where do you get to use your hours? Where do you want to use your hours? And by the way, let's also not overlook that clarity piece is not small. It is
right.
We could have probably called courageous clarity. If I was really going for clarity would be the better name. But I just don't think you can be courageous when you're cloudy. You know, I just don't see how you can when you're in a fog. Right, you can't see a North Star on a foggy night. And the amount of companies we see that don't have that clear purpose, therefore you're not going to have clear people. You know, it's like, oh, we've got 16 priorities this year. It's like, well, no wonder there's a problem. It's like you haven't prioritized the priorities, but it feels like there's clarity here. So from an activism standpoint, sorry, Berman rant, quick little Berman rant. I'm curious where do you put your energy right now?
Yeah. Which that's a key question too, right? Like, I think there's a lot of studies that say, well, that validate that people do want brands to speak out, but they do not want brands to speak out on things that they're not credible on, that they don't have anything additive to say on, or that they have no call to action. Like, there's so many issues that Patagonia cares deeply about. That doesn't mean that we speak out on everything. I think we're not big enough. We don't have the resources to do that. It would take away from, you know, staying focused again on our purpose. And so currently what we're really advocating for is the protection of public lands, which is a really hot topic in the United States because they're constantly threatened by the current administration. And obviously it's a source of so much good. And so using our voice to mobilize our customers to call their Senate, including our own employees to pick up the phone, has been a point of focus. And a few months ago, we asked our team members in Ventura here in California to make boards and signage. And we all did. Mindset, this is wild. Back to the idea of like, this whole situation is wild. Why are we talking about public lands? But also public lands are literally wild and it should remain that way. And we took to the street and it was raining and I've never felt more engaged. I mean, I didn't grow up in a family that, you know, really valued protesting. So it was all kind of new for me to actually protest. And I asked myself, like, what does it do? Well, it sends a message. And it's also really, really nice to be surrounded by like-minded people. Our founder has this quote that says, the best cure for depression is action. And sometimes when I'm like, state of the United States right now, I'm just going to rot in my bed and sit on TikTok. I mean, we all need that, right? We all need moments to like step back before we can get back into it. But it also is a reminder that getting back into it feels nice and encouraging. So I think that definitely stands out. Another thing that really stands out to me, Ryan, is where I used some of my 2 days is during the election. We went to a swing state to, well, they call it canvassing. For people that don't know that term, it's basically ensuring that people that are registered to vote have a clear path to voting. So you knock on the doors and say, hey, just want to make sure that you know where the polls are. You have a car or a neighbor to get you there. You're going to walk there. Just promoting democracy means that everyone that has voting rights should be able to vote. And of course, in a swing state where there's a lot at stake, we were promoting people to vote. And that was wild. I was yelled at, I was screamed at, people got really heated about the idea of me promoting kind of democracy and voting. And there I was as like a European just trying to make sure that people voted, and it was met with some anger. But again, doing that together with my team members was really fun. And, you know, learning a lot about what voting looked like in that area and how we encouraged people to get the vote, I was really, again, it was hard, but it was one of the happiest days that I had at Patagonia, because it felt like we were in the field actually trying to do something.
And I'm sure it brought you together with your team.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, already, although LA is now HQ, what percent of your team's from LA? Like, where are they from? Everywhere? I'm sure they're from everywhere.
Yeah, so the office is in Ventura. That's where we were founded. That's where our blacksmith shop, where Yvonne created his first Piton, which is how the company originally started. It's all still there. Most of our team members either reside in Ventura or around that area. And I'm at home now, but I do come in quite a bit because it's fun. And I also believe, like, my job should be done in an office so I can see kind of how our work impacts our people. I think most of people are in Ventura, but we have some team members who are either focused on our retail teams. So those either still sit closer to the stores. We have some team members who are focused on our distribution center, who sit in our distribution center. We have some team members who are focused on our customer care team, who sit in that area. So there's a few intentional roles that are placed closer to the teams, again, so they can really experience what it's like to be there and see how our communications are landing or not landing with those members.
Can you share one thing about Patagonia that you're like, oh my gosh, nobody knows this about us? Nobody, like, you know, storytelling is a really big part of what you do, but is there a story? And I'm not saying you're like, oh, we're holding this for the right time story. It's just sort of like, you know, you just sort of like went through and experimented the brand, and 2 years in, you're like, I don't think people know that we are about X, Y, or Z.
Yeah. Can I give you two?
You can give me three.
No, dude. Yeah, three is normally a Roman number. Like, good things come in three. The first time that I went to our distribution center, which is in Reno, I walked in coming from other kind of big company. I worked at a food company for many years. So I kind of had a vision of what distribution center would look like. It was completely different. You know, I walked in and I saw a farm where people were like growing products that we would then use to feed our people for lunch. I saw, again, a lot of pride flags and like a really welcoming community that I haven't always experienced going into some of those spaces. And so the energy was completely different. But what I then stumbled on was our repair center, really like one of the biggest repair centers in North America. We have the slogan, if it's not broke, fix it, which means that, you know, we are partnering with all our customers when a jacket is, or a whatever gear is broken, we'll do our best to repair it. That's part of our promise. And so seeing like repair specialists, and there are many of them sitting together in an open room, working together, brainstorming how to fix either a wetsuit or a black hole bag or some bottom shorts. Like, I was like, my God, like, that's a story. Like, not many brands take repairing so serious. And on top of the making sure that we produce the highest quality, when it does break because of the outdoor conditions that many people are using our product in, it's really rewarding to see that we put so much effort into getting it back to a customer in a state where they can use it again. And then the other one is somewhat connected, which is our Warnwear division, which is in some ways our secondhand brand. So if you currently shop on www.patagonia.com and you see, I want this, but this is a newer jacket, so this is not the right example, but you want like an icon, the website will suggest you can also buy it in pre-condition, so worn before, and give customers the choice. And so really scaling kind of worn wear secondhand Patagonia to continue to bring back some of the products that aren't currently used, I think could be a revolution of its own. I see in LA, everyone's thrifting and looking for secondhand. So how can we as a large company tap into that, given the large circulation of our products that are out there, and continue to find ways to bring them back to people, especially when they're still in good condition?
Yeah, I had an interesting sort of thought as you were yapping. You know, one, if I had to sort of sum up, the worn business is a fascinating, thoughtful space. Like, the word that keeps coming up to me is just intentionality. It's like,
right,
intentionality, intentionality, in every direction is intentionality, right? Like, let's play chess when everyone else is playing checkers or who knows what they're playing at this point. But like, let's at least do our part to be intentional. But then, you know, if you think about the, you talked about your purpose about connection, but then you also talked about the repair business. I kind of feel like you're in the repair business and you're also in the pair business. Like it's the repair business. I mean, not just repairing, you know, product or repairing our planet, right? Like that feels like you're in that business. And then the pair business is like, hey, this isn't just about you. It's about connection. Like we should be pairing ourselves up and connecting with others and experiencing life through, you know, again, we shared those experiences in a swing state. That was the pair business. Or like go outside and do what you love. That's in the pair business. One of the things I wonder when you, because as an outsider, I feel the save our human planet.
Yeah.
I don't feel as much right now the enjoy our human planet. Hmm. I don't feel as much of like, right, pair up. You're here for a short period of time. Don't be an asshole. Right. But like, go. But also like go live your adventure. Go
right.
Don't do it. Intentionality, right? Don't suck the resources out, but like go cook by the fire. There's like a potency to the experience. Go on a hike, meet somebody, go on a bike ride, go be an activist, right? Do it in a thoughtful, intentional way. Go, there's almost like a potency that I almost feel like, is there an opportunity? The word that I keep coming back to is alive. Like, are you alive? Like, how does the brand help me be more alive? And I wonder if there's, it, you know, you're behind the scenes, so you're there. But I've felt this save our planet, you know, repair the planet, save our planet, versus also, hey, in moderation, go live.
Yeah.
Go be alive. What's your thought on all this crazy?
Yeah, I actually think you're spot on. And I think our storytelling team would definitely gravitate towards that. I think it comes through definitely when you look at some of our more product campaigns or stories. Like, we create products to help people go out and enjoy and have adventures and do things. And also, like, when you do that, Ryan, like, this thing of, like, nature, our world, public land, like, it moves away from this thing being, like, theoretical or academic. Like, it's fucking real. And when you play in those spaces and you learn to enjoy them, you also start to appreciate them. And then when you appreciate them, you start to really care. And when you care, you want to defend it. And you become more of an advocate for, you know, keeping these places intact because they're so beautiful, but they also, you know, provide so much joy. I think there's a lot of joy through allowing people to experience those things through kind of the Patagonia gear that we put out. So yeah, it does feel urgent, and because it is, it's a pretty grim situation that we're all in. But within that, I think there's definitely a lot of opportunities to show how fun the world can be and again, help people to connect to it so they hopefully start caring about it too.
So I met you two jobs ago.
Yeah.
And then you went Kraft Heinz to, I think you went to Dallas, or at least headquartered in, weren't they headquartered in Dallas?
Foot Locker. New York.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they're in New York. And then here we are. What changes have you seen in yourself from David I met in Chicago to the Foot Locker David to this 2 year in version of David?
Yeah, I think pretty big. I think I hope that people always describe me as someone that gave a damn. I definitely always cared about people. I think that drew me to internal comms and the employee psychology that I find so interesting. But I was never like a front leader in like challenging like social constructs or big political issues. I think the world that we're in right now requires that. So beyond the experiences that I've had moving through these different cities, meeting different people, understanding how especially marginalized communities are impacted by policies, but also the climate crisis in proportionately, I have also seen that I don't want to just sit on the sideline or go to bed thinking like, well, you know, I haven't really done enough. I definitely want to be on the right side of history. And I have become quite passionate about defending the things that I believe we should all care about, which is preserving this planet for our next generation, but also taking care of the people that are currently on it, which just means that we all have to be a little bit more in community. And like, I think we've really walked away, or we almost forgotten this idea that we're neighbors and we are in it together. And that sometimes means that people that have less should get a little bit more so that we can all come up together. I truly believe that. And again, I would never say that Patagonia is the solution for all of that or just ideal company. Like, but I will say that moving into a space that is advocating for a lot of those things, you know, has felt really refreshing, especially in an internal comms role where you're always the voice for a company. But internally, it feels nice to practice a voice that feels very closely aligned to the things that I really care about.
So when you go hit a swing state now, and you know, like I'm, and again, I'm not asking you for perfection on the data here, but like that is a, I mean, I agree with you that, I mean, I grew up in DC, outside of DC. So, which is like,
yeah,
you know, I grew up in the Mason-Dixon line, which was basically the break of the North and the South. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to summer camp in the South and saw that whole crazy. And then I went to school in upstate New York and lived in New York City. And then I came out to California. So like, although I've never done Midwest, although I've clearly spent a lot of time now in Chicago because of the work that we used to do.
Yeah.
I do agree with you. I think we're more alike than not. But, yeah, you know, we talk about this as wild.
Right.
What percent of people do you feel are actually getting that we're in this together? How low
I'm
is
hopeful.
It?
Yeah, I am hopeful. I do think we've maybe lost our way a little bit, and maybe, you know, things have gotten a little cloudy, and maybe, you know, some of the things that we're seeing today make people realize that we are a community. Listen, I love my American friends and family members. I spend an awful lot of time going back to the Netherlands defending them. I will say that I do think that the American dream isn't necessarily a team sport. It was never about coming up together. It's almost created in a way where if one person has to win, the other person has to suffer. And that's how the system is built. I think if we can win in ways while also bringing up people that just need a helping hand, I believe that as human beings, we all feel better. And so I'm an optimist. I do believe that most people are good and we'll find our way back to like a system that cares. But damn, is it difficult right now to see that. And it's so easy, Ryan, when you go to swing states to like get angry, ignore. I think what I'm trying to practice is curiosity. Because I think in conversation with each other, I think there's a lot of middle ground that you can reach. I had a conversation with a gentleman at an airport, and he was probably a few whiskeys in and I had two wines, and we started yapping about everything in the world, and we ended on the really fun conversation of gay marriage. And he believed that that wasn't right and it should be canceled, or I don't know what word he used. And of course, like my instinct as a gay man who's getting married next year is like to throw my wine in his face and walk away. But I don't think that's productive. What instead I did was like ask him a few questions about why he felt that way, and also shared a little bit about myself, like my sexuality, that it isn't a choice. I was definitely born this way. And I don't know if I left that guy in a different way, but
he did. I'm sure he did. He pick up that you were gay.
Hopefully. I mean, it's pretty obvious.
Wait, what state? I'm curious. What state? Not mental state. What state were you in? Was it in the U.S.?
Yeah. I think I was in Ohio. Yeah, and again, I'm not disillusioned to say, oh, the guy is now an advocate for, you know, LGBTQ+ rights, but maybe there's an inch that moved in his mental space that now sees people like me slightly different. Or maybe he thought about it. At least I know there's more progress there than just simply walking away. And in a world that feels so incredibly divided right now, it feels like there's no way to reach each other anymore. And I'm just continuously trying to reach people by remaining curious about why people do the things they do. Again, with the ultimate belief that we're inherently not so different.
You know, I can't help but bring up your, you know, we did five questions.
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago, and where it came from, for those who don't know what the heck I'm talking about, it's just like just a newsletter, throw over 5 questions to David, keep it real on the courage side. And it was a response to you sort of admitting in the past when Pride would roll around, Pride Month would roll around, you'd be like, oh, here we go. Every brand is coming out of the woodworks, and suddenly everyone, air quotes, everybody cares.
Yeah.
And then this year kind of rolled around, and you know, it's clearly a different time. It's like it's a different version of fear. Can you sort of share your observation and what you wrote about?
I think you did it well. But yeah, I would say that in my role working for other companies, I've led employer brand teams, which means like thinking about how brands show up to, you know, potential new talent, but also internally, because an employer brand, I think, works both ways. And I've always in those moments challenged like what seemed like empty gestures, but also challenged the need to continue to show up in ways that are authentic. I, on a really personal note, felt hurt by seeing that many brands didn't show up this year, also including the rollback of a lot of the DEI policies. Because again, when you really think about it on a human level, my community is under attack. And I'm talking about it with an immense level of privilege. I'm a white gay man, like, but if you're a trans community member, a BIPOC trans community member, like the current administration are trying to erase those people. And to see a community like that, that again, some brands have used throughout many years to generate profit on, hold up a hand, or maybe they're not even brave enough, but let's imagine holding up your hand and saying like, hey, I'm not under attack here. And to then choose as a brand to say, no, that feels a little too sticky. With the eye on profit, we're not going to support those people, feels hurtful to me, again, as a person that believes that we should all help lend out a helping hand. I also think that ultimately, I do not believe, although in the short term, it might work when you think of short-term profit gain, in the long term, I do think that customers, including your own employees, want to see brands that remain steadfast in difficult times. I think I said something like, brands are not built in easy times, they're built in difficult times because they stand with their values. And so if there is an employer brand specialist, a chief people officer, anyone that looked at that post and thinks, hey, you know, maybe it wasn't right to walk away and maybe there's more that we should have done, at least do it internally to really make sure that those people are protected through our policies, but also feel engaged through what we say. If it's one, I hope it helped. But yeah, talking about courage, I think it's courageous to stand for those community members in times when it's not popular.
I thought it was an incredibly courageous post. I mean, like, again, this is your life. Like you said, like, I can only imagine like you in Ohio, right? And it's not just curiosity. There's a calmness, right? There's a calmness that's needed, right? You're trying to stay open-minded. You're trying to, even in a very complicated arena. And actually, we brought that Ohio speaker here onto the call. His name is Dirk. Dirk, come on, join.
It would be Dirk, truly.
It would be Dirk. It would
be big join us, Dirk. Wash hat on. He's big still hoodie,
3 whiskeys.
A little unshaven. Spent too much time in the sun.
No, we did not find Dirk. He's still at the airport. His flight is not taken off yet. But no, I think you're spot on. You just want to understand, like, how did people? It's all it is, like the wiring. What did you learn? Because it's pretty much like that's basically it. Like, what did you learn? Who taught you?
Yeah.
And why do you feel that way? And it's
what's your lived experience that shaped this reality for you?
Yeah.
Again, introducing someone like myself to maybe shape that lived experience. Like, oh, I met this gay European at the airport. He was quite interesting. That'd be nice.
I saw a study recently, I think. So among Gen Z, over 20% identified as LGBTQ+.
Mm.
And that's Gallup, and it's doubled since 2012. So like,
yeah,
you know, part of why I bring it up isn't just like 2 of 10 or 1 of 5. It's like, well, okay, if you start looking at family dynamics, well, I'm sure there's, do you have 4 relatives? Do you have like 1 of 5? Like,
yeah.
Like sometimes it just starts like with, hitting home for some. I'm sure. I know. From your family, I'm curious as when you finally were like, you were coming out. No surprises. People surprised.
And I think that speaks to the privilege too, Ryan. Like, I think I practice my voice because I grew up in a family that was so incredibly supportive. Like, honestly, it feels like I joke and said, you guys made me gay. Like, my parents, I was in full drag at the age of 5. Like, my mom would, you know, always told me that, like, the way I am is perfect. That instills a whole lot of confidence, like how you then navigate, again, lived experience and how you then navigate the world. It's like, nothing's wrong with me. And like, my parents have always told me that I was fine. And so when I came out, they were like, my God, finally, although I was only 16, they were like, here it is. And there were cakes and balloons and it was a whole thing. So again, super privileged to have that experience, but maybe there's something I can do with that privilege is like, practicing my voice for people that either had a completely different experience or are still struggling with their identity or don't yet know how to practice their voice, especially at work, and maybe open the door, even if it's just a millimeter for people to slowly walk in.
I mean, I hate to bring this full circle, but, and this was not my intention. It's not like I've got a design for the episode, but like, you know, when I said I've had over 200 some guests on the show and what I've learned the most by people is it's not that they're shooting for courage. They're just keeping it real. Mm. And think about if you're at one of those organizations or you're not living, you have to live a little white lie in your life. Like, what's nice is you are keeping it real. You're living your truth. You get to be true to who you are. And I think I've sort of adopted a, you have to care and not care at the same time mentality, where it's like, I deeply care about who I am. My values, what I stand for. You would have loved David. I was in Chicago, not the client you think. I was with somebody else recently. And it was a moment where I'm like, well, we're about to even lose a client. Right? It was like, because this needs to be said. So like, I'm about to lose a client or I'm about to keep a client for the next 3 years. Like, right. Because I believed it needed to be said and nobody was saying it. And to me, that is the definition of courage, is like living your truth, being thoughtful. Don't be a jerk about it. Have intentionality. As you think about your world right now, and I'd love one personal and one professional. You know, we say we're fear fighters. There's no courage without fear, right? So you got to address the fear. What is one big fear you are sparring with professionally and personally?
You can pick
the order.
Personally, it goes back to the answer I already gave you, like being a great partner, being a great brother, being a great friend, being a great son. I think I'm admitting to a weakness. I think I'm at fault for often thinking about what other people's needs are and if I do enough to meet those. It sounds like I'm not a perfect person, don't get me wrong, but I do worry about that quite a bit. And then professionally, I would say, even when you met me, I think 2 years ago, Ryan, I used to be a bit of an office clown. Like I was the first person to crack a joke. And I often did that, especially at moments where I felt really insecure, because it's a defense mechanism to push through that, like, you know, just try to be funny and then distract people. I think I'm really finding a voice that's a little bit more in tune with how I actually feel, even if that means, to your point, pissing someone off, because honesty can be an act of kindness, or even if that means that you want to be radically clear about something without softening it with a joke. So I think it's not necessarily... my fear is not getting that right because I'm still practicing it. But on more optimistically said, I think there's a real opportunity to lead more authentically.
All right, last question. Next week or this week, choose this week, one place where you're going to be a bit more courageous is where?
I'm auditioning for the gay men choir in LA. I auditioned for them 6 months ago and they said no. I was completely unprepared. I sang, it didn't go right. I forgot my lyrics. It was truly a disaster. And when they called me and they said, hey, you have some vocal abilities, but we don't want you. I was like, I will never audition again. And then I was like, what a weak thing that would be. Like, I want to at least go back and give this my all. And so I've hired a singing coach. I've been practicing my songs, my range, my breathing techniques. And I'm going to give this thing one more go. And that feels terrifying. I think it's in 3 weeks. But at least I'll look back knowing that I've done it, gave it my all. But also, like, if I get it the second time around, like, the sweeter I think the comeback will be.
I mean, I've always said the best remedy of depression is action. You can quote me on that, David.
You
can quote me
on that.
No, I would say this falls under this is wild and I love it and it's great. And we've been joined by my guy here, David van der Sanden. Hopefully I got that right. I didn't blow that, did I? I got that right.
No, the David. You could do a David van der Sanden.
Oh, do you go David? Stop.
I mean, that would be the right thing. Yeah.
David, now I know you're 55 minutes in. We're learning this. Man, it's great to see you. Congratulations. We're always like, you are one of us. We're however we can support you. You know where to find us. Stay brave out there, man. Keep, and you have to keep us posted on what you hear on the choir. That'd be so great.
I will. Thanks for having me.
All right, buddy. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Courageous Podcast. If you enjoy the show, don't forget to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts so more people can find us. See you again next week.